Maybe. There we go.
The following podcast you're about to listen to is rated M for mature and contains scenes and language of an adult nature. You have been warned.
Mother, God, son of a... you son of a... God, frickin'...
And now, fellow geeks and geekettes, your very own host for the evening, Mr. CJ Poe.
Woo-wee! Welcome back to Comic Geek IO. This is issue 10. We've made actually 10 issues with this. I'm your host, the King of Geeks, CJ Boat. Joining me this week, once again, the awesome producer man who's about to get cyber punched over the internet, John Slater.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
This week, we're going to be covering, in the second half of the show, Mega Man number 25, Deadpool number 9, and See Me After Class. But more on that later. How you doing tonight, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm not too bad. It's been a pretty long weekend. Going to be doing more stuff tomorrow. Did Star Wars Weekends yesterday at Disney, and it was fucking amazing.
Yeah, I kept seeing those nice little Foursquare hangout, or not hangouts, but pings on my iOS device, and I'm like, man, I wish I could be there. I wish I could do that.
Oh, yes, and due to the Star Wars Weekends, Rachel is officially in love with a Star Wars character, she's probably from the Clone Wars, named Aura Sing, and she's thinking about doing a Dragon Con outfit dressed as her, and Slater's about to get murderized because he doesn't think she can pull it off. Yeah, you're about totally get destroyed, dude.
I'm gonna get murdered.
you are totally gonna get murdered. Just as a we're gonna go ahead and just as a heads up, we're not gonna be doing too many or any spoilers at the first half of the show. That'll be all held to the second half of the show. Sorry, Rachel's winging me. And yeah, other than that, all right. So what have you been reading?
So, I've been reading a interesting manga that I guess a lot of people are really interested in. I guess it's been pretty popularized, and it's been a couple of years since I've been back into anime. A fairy tale manga. I decided to go ahead and pick it up and start reading the very first chapter of it. It's really funny, really cool, right up my alley. I mean, I'm pretty much into the fantasy genre anyways, with magic, magicians, ninjas, even though ninjas isn't really fantasy. Well, kind of, but...
Well, comic ninjas so, are.
Comic ninjas. Somewhat fantasy, yeah. So, the fairy tale manga, for those that don't know about it, it's about a girl, a celestial wizard, Lucy, wants to join the fairy tale, which is a guild for the most powerful wizards within the entire land. But instead, her ambitions land her in the clutches of a gang of unsavory pirates led by a devious magician. Her only hope is Natsu, a strange boy she happens to meet on her travels. And Natsu's not your typical hero, but he just might be Lucy's best hope. So It's pretty interesting. Starts off really kind of action-packed and then really starts getting into the comedy. So
nice.
It's pretty cool. I'll have to see where it takes off from there.
I've read a couple stories, but... I haven't really gotten too far into that one. I had to really limit the amount of manga I was reading because I was reading so much of it, and Fairy Tail was in that. I mean, I was reading Fairy Tail, One Piece, Bleach, Naruto, History's Strongest Disciple, Kenpachi.
My friend actually got me into watching the anime for that one.
I was reading a couple other ones. I don't remember what they were now. Rosario and Vampire, which would be right up your alley.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
It's pretty good. It's way ecchi, though. Like, way ecchi.
Way ecchi? You mean ecchi, not ecchi?
Ecchi. Ecchi.
Way ecchi.
Hey.
I'll check that one out.
Tomato.
True.
Other than that, I lied a few weeks ago. I said I was done with Green Lantern. And Geoff Johns' run, 9 years on Green Lantern, his 9-year run ended on issue 20 of Green Lantern. And I picked it up, and it was an extremely good book. Like, it actually closed off the saga that the Wrath of the First Lantern saga very well. It's like, it was 80-something pages.
Whoa.
Massive. And
for a single comic?
Like I said, this is the end of Geoff Johns' era on it. So, literally...
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be all blustering out, yeah.
And strangely enough, it's actually a good jumping on point.
That's good.
For the end of a series, it actually goes back through, like, all of Geoff Johns' run on Green Lantern. It goes back from Abin Sur to up till the present. So, yeah, and it's still the $2.99. And that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, it is.
And, yeah, it's probably my favorite Green Lantern book maybe since the beginning of Darkest Night, or Blackest Night, rather. Like, 4 years ago.
When did this one come out?
Last week. It was supposed to come out the first week of May, and it got pushed back and pushed back and pushed back. And strangely enough, there's actually a... because it got pushed back, they kept the rest of the Lantern comics on pace, which is okay, except for the fact that two of them that were released this month took place after the finale of this.
Oh, no. They kind of screwed everything up.
Oh, yeah, they were both epilogue comics. So I'm reading them, and I'm like... Because one of them was still a book I pick up, which is New Guardians. Because Kyle Rayner is my favorite Green Lantern, so I pick up his book every month. And I'm like, oh, the epilogue, did I miss the finale? Maybe. Oh, well, it's freaking Green Lantern, I don't care. So I'm reading it through, and they go through the end of it, I'm like, okay, I really missed something here. And, yeah, sure enough, I looked at them like, Comixology doesn't have 20, Green Lantern 20 on here. What is this madness? What's going on here? And, yeah, it was finally released this last week and picked that up and read it through twice now.
Oh, jeez.
And, yeah, I mean, this is a copy that I saw how big it was, and I actually went down to the store and picked it up.
Wow.
Yeah. And it takes a lot for me to actually want a... physical copy of a book, but I have physical copies. I have every Green Lantern trade that since Geoff Johns started Green Lantern up until the New 52. So I have
in physical trade. You have all those in physical trade now.
Yeah,
wow.
I have Green Lantern Rebirth, the Sinestro Corps Wars, the Ring of the Light Wars, Blackest Night, Brightest Day, and Flashpoint. Which is not all a Green Lantern thing, but it's still...
No, but still, yeah.
And since the new 52 has just been a complete and total... It seems that Geoff Johns really sold, like... He really wasn't focusing too much on Green Lantern, and was more so doing his awesome Aquaman comic and Justice League, which are actually really good. I like Aquaman in the new 52. Strangely enough, I like New 52 Aquaman better than I liked New 52 freaking Hal Jordan.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are kind of on point with you on that one.
Yeah, and I kind of like the new Green Lantern, the Muslim kid, I forget his name. But I like his character, and I also like the costume of him. So, yeah, but Geoff Johns just... I like him better in the Justice League of America book than I do in Green Lantern. So, again, alright. Enough of that crap. Let's go ahead and hit...
On to the news!
Boop, 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 boop. speaking of DC Comics, they have canceled a lot of books. And some really pissing off a lot of fans. Myself included. This month marks the end of... I'm sorry, I should have had these up. I've read them, but... marks the end of Hawkman, which, no surprise, Hawkman ended. That book has always been shit. That was a Rob Liefeld. Anybody who knows my comic rage knows just how much love I have for Rob Liefeld. Also ended Deathstroke, which is a Rob Liefeld book too, but actually one I liked after Rob Liefeld left it. Team 7, which has always been shit. Firestorm, which makes me a little sad. Ravagers, which I seem to have been the only person in creation that actually liked that book. And Sword of Sorcery, which really, really makes me sad that that book ended, because it was the only full, like, high fantasy, magic one comic that's existed in the New 52. Now,
that's at least one out of the few that I've actually heard of. I mean, I've heard of
All right, and of course, and the thing is with when they do New 52 cancellations, they always replace them with them. So you've had replacements of Gail Simone's new book. I don't remember the name of it. This Green Team Teenage Trillionaires, which sounds like garbage. And a few other ones, but none of them really sound great. And in August is canceling Demon Knights, which is another one of the magic-y titles. Dial H, yes! I'm so glad Dial H is finally being canceled. I cannot believe a Sword of Sorcery was canceled before Dial H. I did Dial H number 10, I think, on issue 6 of the Comic Geek IO Minutes, and you can hear my absolute love for Dial H. Threshold, which made me sad because that's where Blue Beetle has been, and I like Jaime Reyes as Blue Beetle, and anytime I get to have some good Blue Beetle action, I like it. And the book that is causing a huge shitstorm, ending its 40-year publication history, The Legion of Superheroes, has been canceled.
Wow.
Yeah. The big theory is that Legion of Superheroes is not going to be canceled. It's going to be rebooted. So it may not be called Legion of Superheroes. It may be called, you know, the Legion. Like, there's some leaked images of, like, a Justice League Legion. So, that kind of thing. But over at comicbookresources.com has the solicitations for the coming books, and really all of the books, but I have the canceled books linked in the show notes. It is going to completely spoil the plot, so don't read that if you are sensitive to spoilers.
Yep.
All right, next.
So, looks like I pulled a little bit of news, at least things I thought would be interesting to our listeners anyways, of comics and geekdom. So June 5th, I know we're not into June right now, but we will be pretty soon here. On June 5th, Kick-Ass the Trilogy, Mark Miller's costumed high school badass kids won't have a return, obviously, to the theaters until August, but hang on to your butts, kids, because comic book readers can dive into the third chapter of their violent superhero story in Kick-Ass 3. This 8-issue series is the last for Kick-Ass and Hit-Girl. So here's hoping to the fact that it may end on a high note. At least we hope so.
Knowing the way that Mark Miller writes things, I seriously doubt it. And also, which, the weird thing is they haven't even released the second The Balls to the Wall comics yet.
They haven't?
No, they have not. They have not released the Balls to the Wall comic yet because they wanted to release it in tandem with the movie.
It's got to be coming pretty soon. If they don't, then they're going to be dropping the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm glad they're doing it, but that's really weird.
Yeah, it totally is. In more news, Action Comics number 1 has been found. It's very rare to find an Action Comics number 1 from the era of the 1920s, 1930s. And as we all know, finding Action Comic number 1 is the holy grail of all comic books. Why? Well, it happens to be the premiere of Superman. In Minneapolis, earlier this week, it was found in a small house in a town in Minnesota. A Mr. Gonzalez did some research in finding the comic that was actually found in a home, in a house insulation. It was wrapped up in a newspaper, and it really wasn't to the best look. But he tried to do some research that confirmed that the comic was in fact valuable. Well, duh, you know, it's a comic book number 1 for crying out loud. Though not as much as it could have been, he got into a heated discussion with his relative about its value, and the back cover got ripped within the discussion about the value of it. What a moron. You don't do that over an argument. Oh. I'm sorry, but... Oh, this totally ripped it down. So, because of the damage, New York-based online auctioneer ComicConnect.com graded the book a 1.5 on a 10-point scale. That is very, very low. By comparison, an Action Comics number 1 that was graded a 9 recently fetched a whopping $2.16 million. Bidding on Gonzalez's find was up to $127,000 as of Friday last week, and the bidding closes June 11th.
It's not too bad, considering it has literally been heating his house.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, that,
it's pretty
that
interesting.
Is...
Obviously, he didn't put it there himself. It must have been the previous owner, but still, the big burning question on my mind is, who the hell, like, keeps a number one comic, like, in the insulation of their house? I'm guessing because of the fact, like he was saying, and it was wrapped up in other newspapers and stuff too, whoever was doing it before, it may have just inadvertently fell into some of the lining and stuff when they were doing the house up, and they didn't know. But, man, for him to find that, I'm sorry, but if I find a find like that, I'm not telling any of my relatives. I might tell a couple of close friends, but they ain't touching it.
Yeah, that shit's going right up online.
That's right. Right in a plastic seal bag and right online.
Oh, yeah. Bag boarded so online.
That's right. And then in follow-up news, I have preview artwork I found for X-Men number 2, the comic coming out pretty soon. I have a URL in the show notes that we'll go ahead and we'll throw up to everybody. So preview pencils and solicitations for Brian Wood and Oliver Copiel's all-female X-Men number 2, a creation from Grant Morrison's run on the X-Books, makes a return, but that's only part of the story. And you go through some of the artwork, and it's kind of... it's got a few scenes or whatever of Psylocke there with her bent over a table, her ass sticking out. I always like Psylocke. She's one of the hot characters. It's got Rogue in here. Love Rogue and the way they did it. Storm looks to be the key figure in the book, but what about a solo series from the character? So Marvel Comics EIC Axel Alonso said that there are no plans currently for such a series, and he stated, quote-unquote, Storm is a key part of X-Men Uncanny X-Force, edited by the second biggest Storm fan in the world, Daniel Ketchum, and Wolverine and the X-Men. So those are the places for Storm character stuff. No plans for a solo series of any sort right now, though. X-Men number 2 will be published on June 26th, leading up after my birthday, hint, hint. The writer is going to be Brian Wood, and the penciler is going to be Oliver Copel. So it looks interesting. If it's cheap enough on like Comixology or something like that, I might have to scoop it up. Take a look.
I do want to say how stupid I was. Publication date on Kick-Ass 2 was from October 2010 till March 2012. A total of 7 issues, so there's just a chance that it was so sporadically released that I just completely missed it.
Oh, that you completely missed it. Well, at least it's out there, so at least people
7
know
comics
it's like,
between 2 years, yeah, I most likely missed it. But yes, I'm sorry, I messed up. Yes, Slater's right.
We all make mistakes.
Kick-Ass 3 is coming out next month. Kick-Ass 2 has been out for a year now. I wonder if Comixology has that. Now I'm going to look on that
one. Yeah.
Because I'm distracted.
Let's check on that one.
All right.
Besides that, though, I have a quick 1 minute and about 10 second clip. It was part of another article, but the article doesn't really, you know, put it in an article sense. It's more the sense of, well, I'll just kind of lead up to it. What it is it's a audio clip I captured of a geek dad and his lovely wife. They have 2 wonderful kids, a young son, I think he's maybe a couple months old or up to a year old, and his daughter right now is 4 years old, and they are a comic geek family, and yeah. They're going in the car on the ride to the supermarket, and his dad is kind of giving this comic book drill quiz or whatever to his daughter, and listen to his daughter fire back every single freaking answer to comics that his dad gives about these Marvel comic book characters. So here
nice.
It is, if I can pull up the clip.
And on the other end, we're going to go ahead and go right from there to the break. So it'll be a couple seconds, but on the other side of that, we're going to talk some Mega Man, some Deadpool, and some boy manga.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Okay, car trivia of superheroes with Daddy and Mia.
Who's the God of Thunder, kiddo?
He's not.
Okay. Who's Thor's brother? Who's Thor's dad? Where do they live? What is Captain America's shield made of?
Vibranium.
Where's the only place on Earth you can find vibranium?
Wakanda.
Who's the prince of Wakanda? Where else? Name me the 4 members of the Fantastic Four.
Invisible
Girl. Husband. Mister.
Mister Fantastic.
Who's her brother?
Human Torch.
Yes. Who? What's the guy made of rock? What's his name? What's his catchphrase? What does he say?
It's Clementine.
What does Hulk say?
It's Hulk.
Yes. What is Iron Man's real name?
Tony Stark.
What's Iron Man's best buddy's name? Girlfriend's name?
Pepper Pot.
Yes.
It's ridiculous. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Check out Today in Musical Theater with your host,
Dale Campbell,
a podcast that highlights the events that happened in the musical theater industry, found here at Geek.io at geek-io.com, where we put geek in and geek out.
How it stacks. My name is Willis, and this is my good friend and co-host,
Jay Dizzle.
About a year ago, I came up with this idea of writing a podcast about pop culture. The way things are cool when we were kids and how it does or does not stack up as an adult. TV shows, movies, toys, places.
Just doesn't live up anymore.
Yeah,
it's like...
You got to stop laughing at me. Classic Arnold movies, and then spend like a couple of days just watching like the crappy kid stuff he did.
Oh, hell yeah.
Check out the show today at geek-io.com/howitstacks and on Twitter at howitstacks.
Why didn't the ad play? This podcast is brought to you by Tweaked Audio, 7 styles, 7 colors, amazing quality, amazing customer service. Check them out at tweakedaudio.com. Use checkout code GEEK for 33% off and free shipping and a lifetime warranty because they're awesome. Now back to the show. And also on this side of the show, just remember, we have a giant
spoiler warning!
I got to warn you. You're doomed to stay. Go. Go.
Indeed. So, let's go ahead and start off with Deadpool number 9 from Marvel Comics. Now, I am a huge old-school Deadpool fan, primarily because I read his comics when I don't want to think. Nothing in Deadpool comics ever makes any sense, and I love it for it. The sense of humor is always amped up to 11, and just same as it in this one. But this time, it actually, this book actually reveals a little bit more serious sides of the Merc with a Mouth. Now, it's hard to get into this book because it's in the middle of a set without going previously in Deadpool. Deadpool had to kill a bunch of resurrected presidents of the United States that were that were brought to life by a former S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent turned warlock who is now Deadpool's friend. During this saga, while he had to kill the presidents of the United States, I think she was actually killed by Abraham Lincoln. His handler from S.H.I.E.L.D. was killed, and because of the necromancer, she was sucked into Deadpool's head so that they could bring her back to life later. Now, not only is there Wade, who is the normal, you know, rational-thinking person, there's Deadpool, the psychopath, and now a woman. So, that, that adds to comedy.
Wow.
Yes, as I said, this is the reason why I read Deadpool every month. So, this issue, we start with Deadpool and unconscious, and his former, his inner female, Agent Preston, trying to wake him up. During his slumber, Deadpool utters "Beautiful Eleanor," which obviously Preston's very curious because she's never heard, you know, Deadpool think of anybody but himself. Previous to this, you know, when Deadpool's awake, he keeps Preston in a box, basically. He allows her to talk, but nothing else. And Deadpool is very good at keeping mental attacks, you know, keeping mental attacks out. So she kind of takes advantage of the fact that she can't get him to wake up, and now she's curious as hell. So she wanders through his mind, trying to just see how depraved he truly is. She enters a door that was previously locked to her, and in there is a gorgeous room. And full of Deadpools, how he thinks of himself. From a thinker to a shitter, to a killer, to a strong man, to an art, and to a little weakling. In here, there's a dark area that even while Deadpool is unconscious, she's completely locked out of. Now, many people are probably asking, where the hell's the plot? That comes next. Fat Necromancer Man flashes some cops, literally raises up his kilt and flashes cops. Gets tased in the nuts and winds up in Rikers Island. Because, you know, that happens. It sounds like a party to Rachel. And the plan is to break out of there because there is a secret library underneath it. So he teleports Deadpool and the ghost of Thomas Jefferson, don't ask, into Rikers Island and teleports them all into the library / dungeon in the basement, trying to figure out a demon who originally made the necromancer resurrect the presidents of the United States in the first place. This is, you know, his name is Vettis. He serves Mephisto, and because Mephisto hasn't been released yet in Marvel Now, I'm surprised. But yeah, I think this is the first mentioning of Mephisto in the Marvel Now reboot. And this demon Vettis is tormenting them. He's having Deadpool kill these people, or he's threatening to drag Preston down into hell. So Deadpool, who's trying to do the right thing, is following this demon's orders. So they find some information about him. It's not too much. It's kind of saying that Vettis is a rogue demon trying to break free of Mephisto. Not really too much helpful of them, but Deadpool gets a message saying that he has to go kill somebody so Vettis can talk to him. Leads them to a superhero named Artie, who can talk to fish and breathe underwater. And yes, Aquaman's name is Arthur. Just putting that out there. And they're making comments and comments and comments about how dumb that superpower is. Deadpool kills him and brings Vettis into the world again. Vettis says he's trying not only just to break free of Mephisto, but is trying to completely destroy him, and he's going to haunt Deadpool and force him to help him until he gets his wish. And so Vettis leaves, says, "I'll contact you later for your next victim. I need more souls." Deadpool and Thomas Jefferson and Necromancer Guy, I don't think they ever released his name. If they did, it's completely a moot point. So Deadpool says, "All right, we're going to go talk to Vettis' boss, Mephisto. You know, God of Hell and whatnot." And Deadpool can't die. He's been more massacred than Wolverine. He literally... that is his mutant powers. He can't die.
And oh, yeah. I've seen, like, tons of comics with him getting, like, his hands cut off, and then next scene, you know, I got it back, guys. Or, oh, that... It's not a problem.
Well, in this comic book, Artie sends four sharks after him, and they rip him to shreds. Like, literally, limb from limb. Oh, and man. In the next scene, he's back, and he shoots Artie in the face. Poor Artie. And so he offs the Necromancer, because the Necromancer is no way in hell he's getting to heaven. Let's face it, he resurrected the presidents of the United States, killed hundreds of people. There's no way he's getting into heaven, so he offs the Necromancer. And that's the end of the book. So, yeah, my points for this book, you don't read Deadpool at all for plot and coherence. If you do, you are in the way wrong book, my friends. Oh, pardon me. But this book actually tied together a lot of points that were hanging from the last nine, actually had a plot going through it, along with, you know, the awesome art and awesome humor. Solid 8 out of 10 on this book. Deadpool's god powers kind of bother me sometimes, and that's really the only thing that's, you know, the only thing that kept me from giving a higher on this one. Because inexplicably, after being shredded by sharks, you should at least when Wolverine gets, you know, his arm ripped off, it takes a couple seconds to show it popping back into place.
Oh, yeah.
Not Deadpool. Nope. Poof, he's back. Alright. So, on to review the second. Mega Man number 25. Worlds Collide, part 5. Fight of the Century, round 2. Mega Man's in charge this time. Rush beat Eddie and Tango, that green cat that I couldn't remember the name of. I still don't know where he's cut from.
Tango? I don't think I've ever heard of Tango.
I don't know. He might be a comic-only character. Or something. Are ready to bust up Sonic, and they readily hand him his ass. Like, Sonic bolts up the side of a building, like, haha, you can't get to me. Rush starts flying up. He goes, of course the dog can fly. Why can't he? Eddie repairs Mega's arm really quick, and, you know, the lemon shooter keeps happening. Pew, 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 pew. And punchy, punchy, and punchy, punchy, punchy. And there's a lot of pew-pews and a lot of punchy-punchy. So...
pew-pew!
Exactly. And so Sonic is running through, you know... They each still think each other is a bad guy at this point. So Sonic decides to take the idea of running through civilians, because maybe he can kind of think of somehow to get this bad robot, or maybe this bad robot has a limitation on only killing Sonic. And so they get to talking, because neither one of them are willing to endanger civilians. And we all know what happens when heroes start talking to each other. They find a common ground. And Wily and Robotnik, because I refuse to call him Eggman, are seeing this from the Skull Rock Zone or something like that, Skull Egg Zone, and decide to unleash the power of Talesman upon them. The fight itself between Talesman, Sonic, and Mega is pretty short. It's only about a page and a half, because you're facing Mega Man with Rush and Sonic. So Sonic beats the ever-living crud out of him, and Mega's like, alright, I'm going to take his power to see if I can see what's going on with him. So Mega Man uses his awesome vampire soul thingy that he does, and poof, Tails is back.
Soul-devouring power. What?
Yeah, the whole, like, soul vampire leech thing that Mega Man does when he beats a bad guy.
Oh, that thing. Oh, okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, it's actually Tails. Tails is alive.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And so it kind of... Tails kind of gives a quick, you know, I was with you guys, there's a shadow passed over me, and then I... hear what happened. So the good guys who have been turned into robot masters are still alive in there, which is good, because that was a big fear of mine, that they actually killed off freaking Tails, Sonic, Shadow, and Amy.
Yeah.
So Sonic has his buddy back, and also a opportunity to actually keep on pace with Mega Man and Dr. Light, because let's face it, Sonic is not too much into the thinky-thinky. So they teleport back to Dr. Light's lab, and Bass and Metal Sonic are attacking Dr. Light, Roll, and Construction Robot Guy. And Proto Man's holding them off, but you know, it's Metal Sonic and Bass. So the good guys show up and lay the smack down all of them. They teleport away, but not before, you know, Dr. Light gets an energy signal on where they teleported to. So they get the plan together. Plan is hatched. All the good guys, Sonic, Mega Man, Rush, Tails, and Proto Man, are going to go follow them and leave behind Roll, who has amped up her power, and also Duo. If you've played Mega Man 8, you know who Duo is. You do not mess with Duo. Duo is basically
Mega Man 8.
Duo is basically a Sentinel from the X-Men. He is a giant, lovable guy.
Oh, one of those? Holy shit!
Yeah, he is protecting Dr. Light's base now.
Damn.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about Dr. Light's base anymore. That's kind of that write-off of, we're not going to be back here for a while, but you don't have to worry about this.
You'll be okay.
Because Duo has literally a nuclear missile inside of him.
Holy crap!
Yes. Yeah, there's actually a good amount of story behind Duo. He's basically... If you know the story behind Zero from the Mega Man X series, he's kind of the prototype of that, except much larger and having a nuke in him. He's created by the bad guys, became a good guy, blah, 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 blah. Kind of like Proto Man, but, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, they go through to the Skull Egg Zone, which is the bad guy's place. And scene. Yeah, this is the end of the first arc of this series. Next time, it's actually finally the good guys versus the bad guys. On to the Skull Egg Zone. I was really hard on this last month's issue of Mega Man. The first month's issue of Mega Man. And this series is really amped up. Like, is really... really good, like easily a 9 out of 10. I just kind of wish that we could at least get a double-sided issue, or double-sized issue. Because
yeah.
There was a lot going on still, and it still feels like there's so much being poured into 22 pages that you could easily, I mean, yeah, it's spread over 3 books, but you could easily throw a 4th into this and not make it feel like it's too much. So yeah, 9 out of 10 for Mega Man number 25.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, 9 out of 10 turn. Isn't too bad for something of that magnitude. That's actually pretty cool. I was looking forward to seeing what next was coming up in that Mega Man fight. I was like, oh man, every week you come on, it's just bigger, banger, better. Bigger, banger? Yeah, bigger, bam, 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 just more action, yeah.
And I'm so glad they're finally over this whole introducing the two heroes thing, and now we can actually get on to the good stuff.
Which is always good, yeah. So I did a little bit of comic book reading as I was coming back home on the bus and stuff from my brand new girlfriend's place. She lives out in Olympia, which is about 4 hours away from me. So
hey, that's where my mom was born.
About Olympia?
Yeah, that's where my mom was born. That's pretty cool.
Nice. It is a pretty cool town out there. It's really indie, retro, a lot of artwork and stuff going on. Yeah, it's definitely my town. So as I was on this bus for another 4 hours, and altogether it was an 8-hour bus ride that I had been on the other day, I had picked up a comic a week ago when I was over at my buddy's place to not only enjoy his birthday party, but also watch Star Trek Into Darkness. I picked up See Me After Class, a comic by Munyu of Project H XXX Production Studios. And this is volume one out of I don't know how many volumes that they have going on. But yeah, this is the first one. And they consider it to be a boys manga, not a dirty hentai manga by traditional means. It doesn't have like hardcore, you know, porn of, you know, guys drilling into chicks and all that type of stuff. You want that type of stuff, they do have hentai mangas, but this one really isn't up kind of that alley. So at least this one was safe enough that I could go ahead and read it on the bus and not have somebody look over my shoulder and go, ew, you're reading that? It's pretty classy in its traditional sense. So the story takes place in Tokyo. A young male student by the name of Yuki Kagami is enrolled into the Horin Academy. It's an elite academy for students, both male and female. So yeah, it's a co-ed school. Miss Ayana Kazunozaka messed up the room assignment for the new freshman that year and has him living in the women's dorm. Oops. Kind of a big mistake. And she did it based upon his name. Yeah, she did it based upon his name and goes, well, I thought you're a girl. And he goes, well, I kind of get mistaken for that a lot based upon my name. They're all talking into the principal's office, so obviously the principal is well aware of the situation as they discuss the matters in her office. She states to them that if any problem or problems arise, either from him or Miss Ayana Kazunozaka, they will be expelled, and Miss Ayana will be fired. So Ayana takes it upon herself to live with Yuki in the same room at the women's dorm. She forces him to cross-dress to eat in the mess hall, stating, you just can't just rush out there on your own as a guy. This is an all-women's dorm. If you want to eat, let alone shower, take a shit, whatever, you're going to have to go and drag. And he refuses, and you know, she basically says, you know, what do I have to do in order to convince you, you know, to cross-dress? And he's like, I don't know. And she's like, I got it. If it's too embarrassing for you to go ahead and cross-dress, I'll do something embarrassing too. So she starts stripping off her clothes down to like her like lace panties and her bra and stuff, and she goes, this is pretty embarrassing for me too, but if it helps, hey, you know, you can see me be embarrassed too, so are you going to do it or not? And he goes, well, I guess I don't have a choice here. So comes back from the mess hall, and then all of a sudden he goes, well, what about the showers? And she goes, well, about that. You just can't sneak out in the middle of the night and take a shower or take a bath. We have timed baths, so somebody's bound to see you. So you're going to have to go while I go, but with the wig on. So you don't have to go in full drag, just, you know, keep the wig on. They go, he has the wig on, he complains, oh, it's getting wet. She's like, don't worry about it. Then next thing you know, this girl that he had bumped into earlier from his class, and by the way, when he goes to class, when he gets to the actual campus itself, away from the girl's dormitory, he gets into the faculty room where Ayana and him, you know, they basically attire themselves with their actual school clothes, and she keeps the faculty door closed, whatever, while he always changes into his boy clothes. However, while he was at the campus, he accidentally bumped into one of his other one of his other roommates who also lives at the women's dorm by the name of Risa Takabane. And he keeps bumping into her as a guy, and she's one of these chicks or whatever who's like really anti-guy. She's like, ew, icky, you know, just keep guys away from me. I'm not really into them. And he bumps into her and he knocks her down, and her panties and stuff are exposed, you know, typical, you know, comic boy fantasy type thing. Ooh, seeing panties, you know, this is pretty hot. Anyways, helps her up and stuff, and, you know, she's just like, you know, don't touch me. But then next scene, you know, he's in the bath with Ayana and taking a bath and stuff in the all-girls dorm, and who happens to show up but Risa. And she goes, who are you? And he goes, I'm Yuki. And I'm thinking in the back of my mind right when I read that part, I'm like, shit, dude, you just gave her your name, and you have the same name too as a boy in her class. She's going to piece it together. You're really screwing up your alias here. Next thing you know, Risa's getting out of the bath, and she's like, well, nice to meet you. I'm pretty sure I'll see you around. And then him and Ayana are there and stuff, and they're just about ready to clean up and get out. But who comes back again in the next scene? Risa comes back. Why? She says, quote unquote, I'm feeling cold, so I'd figure I'd warm up more by getting into the bath with you. And then Ayana says to Yuki, hey, I'll distract her. You go ahead and go behind me while I distract her, and it'll be your only time to get out of the bath. And he goes, great. And he's about ready to go, but Risa jumps in and freaking comes right behind Yuki, and then he starts feeling him up, going, wow, you're kind of flat-chested there for a girl, but this is pretty hot. Han is like tweaking his nipples and stuff, and I'm just going, oh man, this isn't going to be good. What happens if she sticks her hand down there? And she almost did, but Ayana starts playing around with Risa, and Risa's really enjoying it, and she doesn't know what the hell is going on, why this faculty teacher or whatever is wanting to get it on with Risa. And Yuki gets out of the bath, thankfully, but he's just standing there staring, watching them like get it on with each other, and he has the epic nosebleed coming out of his nose and stuff. I thought it was pretty funny. I'm not going to completely spoil it for everybody, even though I could go on and do it, but I really won't, because I'm totally emphasizing you go out and you get this book. It's a really great, funny story. I wouldn't exactly like take this to school and read it, but you know, if you're like me and you've been well graduated years before or whatever, and you're just looking for something to lightly pick up and read as a they consider it to be a boys' manga. Again, it's not a hentai. It doesn't have dirty stuff.
So it's more ecchi than hentai.
Yeah, it's more ecchi than hentai. Like I don't even know if the camera can even really pick that up, but you know, it's more ecchy than anything else. Yeah. It's not, you know.
So there is yeah. Naked time, but not.
Yeah, it's naked time. It's not, yeah. You know, full penetration and all that kind of stuff. I mean, yeah. Granted, the faculty teacher or whatever was sticking her hand down, you know, the other girl's like, you know, crotch or whatever, and finger blasting her, but still.
Oh.
Yeah. They do what they got to do.
Yeah.
So what do I give this? I give this about like a. I give it a 9 out of 10, or actually, well, on a 9. Well, out of a 10 scale, I guess I give it like a 9.9 out of 10, kind of really high up there. The 1 point or half point off or whatever. Anyways, really due to the fact that I like the story. The story is great, but I would like more of a background as far as like. Yuki's upbringing, you know, I don't see any other siblings, I don't hear any mention of his mom or his dad or anything like that. He's obviously living at the dorm, but, you know, how did he get in to the dorm? How did he get necessarily accepted to go to this dormitory? So, want a little bit more of a background about his character, and I'm hoping that some of the other volumes kind of talks about that a little bit. Otherwise, if they don't, it's like, wow, the creator of this kind of left a real gaping kind of a loophole out. Granted, it's not about his past, it's more about where he is right now in the present and hopefully the future, but still, I would like more conclusion about the actual character story himself. So, but yeah, 9.9 out of 10 is what I would give this one. So it was actually pretty cheap. I spent, actually, well, sort of cheap. $17.95 is what I paid for this one. You might be able to find it for cheaper from other bookstores, or you might happen to go onto a digital site that they recommend called eManga.com, where you can also get a digital app for Android and iOS devices to read other manga titles as well. So,
cool.
That's it.
All right. Well, there is that. So let's go ahead and head on out of here. You can reach the show at feedback@geek-io.com. Make sure you put the word comic in the in the subject somewhere. Let me make sure that we read it. If you have any kind of suggestions or anything like that, we're going to look into doing some webcomic stuff here soon, and also some guests. So if you guys got any kind of people that you want to have come on, let us know. Hopefully I can get the comic, the cover art working from on iTunes this week. But we have awesome cover art by Daryl Shaler. If you want anything done or if you want some more information, shoot us an email. We'll make sure to get you in touch with him. This stuff is amazing. He does stuff for Disney, Geek.io. He's done stuff for this. He does my creepy Batman, which is probably my favorite avatar I've ever had. Head on over to the site at geek-io.com for everything we have to offer, including our stuff, you know, Geek.io show, Comic and Disney, How It Stacks, and all of the awesome, most of the awesome Chef Wonder podcasts. You can also take a look at our show calendar if you're confused at what we're how we're recording now. We also are on iTunes under Solo. We're under Comic Geek IO. Or you can catch our master feed, which has everything we do on it, from Disney to the regular show to this one to everything from Today in Musical Theater, How It Stacks. Everything is on our master feed. It's the Geek IO Podcast Network. Check those out. Next week, this time, we have Disney Geek IO recording here at geek-io.com/live. And the week after that, we'll be right back here for some more comic goodness.
Yeah.
Anything
can't
else
wait for that.
Before we head on out of here?
Anything else? Check out Geek.io this week, because we'll be reviewing, what is it? We're reviewing, not Biodome, Encino Man? Yeah,
Encino
we're reviewing
Man.
Encino
yeah,
Man this week,
we're
actually.
Doing the Geek.io rant and review, we're doing Encino Man this week, capping off Pauly Shore month.
Oh, thank God this is going to end.
Oh, please. Everybody's enjoyed everything so far.
It's been pretty funny, but it's got to end.
Yeah, and after that we're going to kick off probably every other rant and review. We're going to do a guilty pleasure from the show hosts.
Oh, boy.
So it'll be, you know, it won't be an every week kind of thing, but probably we'll do like a, you know, Slater's guilty pleasure movie, and then another movie, and then Azevedo's guilty pleasure movie, and then another movie, that kind of thing.
Get ready for another 8-hour film of Beast Wars, everybody.
No. Only four. And be lucky I don't make you guys sit through Beast Machines. That was bad. All right, guys.
Oh, man.
Yeah. No Beast for Machines for me, I promise. All right. We are going to go ahead and head on out of here for the night. So, everybody, check you back here for Comic Geek IO in another 2 weeks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to a part of the Geek IO Podcast Network.
Loud noises!
Copyright 2013.
Visit us at geek-io.com for all of our great shows.
The pressure is building slowly, inexorably inside me. Oh my.
Just because you don't understand it doesn't mean it's bad for you. Go figure out how it works.
I want to get out of here.
Don't be a dick.